Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Sunday night for your Monday morning delivery. Excited to talk MMA with you for the next hour or so as we discuss the latest in mixed martial arts. I am in Arequipa, Peru. Goes is in Las Vegas, Nevada. What's going on, Goes? The power of the internet connects us once again.
Yeah, that's always a scary situation, but so far everything seems good. And it's funny that we're on two different sides of the world, but we're still covering the sport we love.
Could you hear that little fireworks show?
No, I heard the water.
Okay. Yeah, that's just the cold water that I'm having right now. Boy, dude, let me tell you something. Peru gets down when it comes to fireworks. That's all I can say. Now, I know people want us to get into the results from this past weekend, the news, the fights, all that, so we will. But yeah, that's all I got to say. I will either do it on Triple G, or maybe a more laid-back Junkie Radio, or maybe just even at the end of the show, if there's 5 minutes we can squeeze in there. I've seen, because there's times where I'm not even watching fireworks or anything like that. I'm actually witnessing bombs blowing up. It's nuts over here.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably maybe a sensitive thing going on, you know, with the other side of the world, with Palestine and Israel. But that's really what it felt like. If we didn't stand behind this big wooden door at this church that we were at, that our great grandfather founded, you just could feel that impact, you know, that you see in movies that make people kind of like fall back. Right now, it wasn't that strong, but you felt something.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into it, man. Let's do the UFC first. This is an MMA show, and I know at some point, we want to get into celebrity boxing, but I got a better idea. And then we'll start the show because you already know what we're going to talk about. See, I was already off, Goes. I'm in the Southern Hemisphere. My game was already off. Sorry about that. Yeah, let's start off with the UFC. The UFC had a fight night event called UFC Fight Night 230. It was this past weekend. And Edson Barboza and Sadiq Youssef were at the top of the bill. They went a whole 25 minutes. Edson Barboza, who was losing the fight early, turned it around, came back, and won over Sadiq Youssef. Unanimous decision. Congrats to Edson Barboza, who, by the way, nicked a fight of the night. Sorry. Fight of the night bonus, and that's his ninth, the most ever by any UFC athlete. So not the most bonuses, the most specific fight of the night goes to Edson Barboza and Sadiq Youssef. 50 G's there. Let me tell you the rest of the results here. I'll have Ghost chime in, and then we'll talk about more bonuses. Vivian Araujo defeated Jennifer Maya. Jonathan Martinez stomped Adrian Yanez. Michelle Pajeda defeated Andre Potoski. Christian Rodriguez defeated Cameron Simon. Darren Elkins over TJ Brown. Tainara Lisboa over Ravina Oliveira. Terrence McKinney, less than 20 seconds over Brandon Marat. Melissa Dixon defeated Irina Alexeva. Chris Gutierrez defeated Ellen Tengley, something like that. Yeah, I think I said it right. And Emily Ducat beat Ashley Yoder. You know what? I'm already here. The other bonuses went to Martinez and Fajeda. All right, Goes, back to the top, man. What did you think of Barboza versus Youssef?
Dude, that was an amazing fight. So what made it so crazy, for those of you who haven't watched it, was in round one, Edson Barboza. So the strikes that they threw at each other, and I said it out loud too. I can't remember who was in the room, but I said there's just no way this is going to go the distance. Not the way they're throwing strikes right now. It's going to come down to just who hits who first. And Youssef was just not backing down. He was right in his face. And sure enough, he landed a good shot. And Edson looked all but out of this fight. Props to the referee for letting it go as long as he did. There were maybe a couple moments where he probably could have stepped in there and it would have been a night and nobody would have had an issue with it. somehow Edson survives and makes it through, and then eventually like turns it around. And at one point, you know, even got Yusuf hurt a little bit. It was just a great fight. And it really just came down to scoring, you know, how you looked at it. It was a very, very close fight, but I did have Edson Barboza winning it. But for him to just gut it out like that, a veteran, it just says so much about him. And it's one of those fights for Sadiq Yusuf that, like, you just feel for him because, you know, how many times do you hear the boss say, you got to go for that finish, you got to go. He really did everything he could. And maybe it cost him a little bit later in the fight. He did slow down a little bit. That was his shot. And to kind of know that you were just seconds away from putting a legend out like that, that's just such a good skin on your wall to have Edson Barboza. And it didn't work out for him. I'm a little gutted for him, but I don't feel that he goes away with the same feeling that some of the fighters that lose on a main event go away with. I feel like you just kind of applaud both fighters. It was just a great fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so he was a 140 underdog, Barboza was. So he cashes. That's a nice cash for anybody that bet him. I still remember Barboza debuting against Anthony Njikwani in March of 2011, UFC 1. Sorry, that was UFC 128. It might have been his second fight, but he debuted at UFC 123 in 2010. 13 years later, he's still going out there doing his thing. He's had a lot of fights. And he's not slowing down, even though he's 37. He still shows some of that potent striking and sharpness and crispness to his, you know, the arsenal of strikes that he has.
Can I ask you something? Did you know that off of memory, or did you just read that?
No. Well, I knew that he had. Okay, I knew he fought Njokuwani, and as I was saying it, I thought, "Ooh, was that his first fight?" I think that was the first fight I remembered. But he did debut against Mike Lulo, right? So as I was saying that, I had an uncertainty, so I did look up that. But I knew he fought Njokuwani.
Okay.
So I was wrong. It was his second fight.
At breakfast today, I was talking about, I can't remember who exactly it was, but it was a person that I just couldn't remember their name. And it's somebody that we kind of like deal with a lot. But I could remember everything else. You know, it's not like I was blanking out on everything. Mm-hmm. And so somehow the topic of, you know, how you call yourself the goldfish, I was saying his memory is actually a lot better than he gives credit to, because you might not remember what you had for lunch yesterday, but you could remember how Brock Lesnar won and round and what round at what event. I go, he's not really the goldfish that he says he is. So right now I was just about to say he just proved my point, but it was a little bit of both, right?
Yeah, and a lot of times I'll have the main eventers up, so I'll kind of, what can I say, scan their notable wins or whatever, and as you're doing so, you just might retrieve something. And so it's like your nerves, those neurons that fire, I guess. I know I'm sounding like a Bell's palsy patient right now, but if these certain nerves can connect, then I can smile, certain things like that. So if I connect certain dots, then I start to remember who might have been on the card, how it ended, or whatever. But yeah, then there's other times if you go, what did you have for lunch yesterday? I'll be like, I don't know, you know, and sometimes I'll forget an uncle's name or something. It's weird. Yeah. I think what I have goes is maybe decent long term, but short term is not as great.
Well, by the way, before I forget, I ran into Ode Osborne at the park. And he was flying his drone. He says hi.
Hmm. Okay. Hey, by the way, what's going on with UFC 294 watch along?
Well, it seems like we're good to go, no?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. But I think you're gonna have a co-host, maybe.
Oh, I might get somebody just to have there, but it kind of all depended on this, you know, how your transmission was gonna be. Your transmission seems fine. Like right, you could be downstairs and I wouldn't know.
There will be a watch along, folks, on Saturday. And yeah, I guess maybe we're lifting the curtain, peeling back the curtain, I should say. I wasn't sure what the speed would be, but the speed seems to be pretty decent. So there was a plan in place where maybe goes and a fighter could, hold down the fort, I guess, a little bit and just you know, I would be absent in this watch along, or I might pop in for a fight if I'm able to stream in. But
you're not going to believe this, but your connection in Peru is probably better than your connection downstairs.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good. All right. So we'll see. But yeah, let's do that. We are going to have a watch along, folks. So if it's goes and two Muppets, goes and Fedor Emelianenko, it'll be something will be going down, and I will do my best to maybe join the party as well. So that trip was kind of spontaneous, and we've just kind of been doing some patchwork stuff. And guess what, folks, too, you're going to probably get your hands on this podcast here, this episode, some of you, with plenty of time for the weekly show that we do, Spinning Back Like Live, every Monday. It's back to noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. So I will be on that one. Check that out. And so, speaking of fighters, UFC featherweight Cub Swanson will join us for that program. All right, guys. So let's dial it back here. We've definitely pivoted quite a bit. We have Edson Barboza getting the W. He got another bonus. All that's great. 37 years of age. He's been doing it for a long time. And as far as Sadiq Youssef, he didn't have a bad showing. He 10-8'd him on two judges' scorecards. I don't think there's any controversy in terms of who won, because I looked at MMA decisions at least. And, you know, from what I can tell on online, on Fight Night, the right guy won, but Barboza, some 48-45s, some 48-46s, a 47-45. So he pretty much dominated after Youssef's early run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought there were some close rounds, but it was a really fun fight to watch.
I mean, you think there's a case for Youssef winning?
No, I felt like Barboza won. But yeah, when they were reading the judges' scorecards, I don't think we were all like, yep, that's Barboza, because you really didn't know, you know, when 10-8s get involved. And even when Barboza had his moment, you could have given him a 10-8. Like, it was one of those types of fights.
Mm-hmm. All right. What about the rest of the card? What did you think of the rest of the card? I know I flashed through the card pretty quickly there, but, you know, we had those leg kick stoppage by Jonathan Martinez, a guy that we interviewed, who was extremely shy, doesn't open up. But guess what? He's a quiet 10-3 in the UFC. And now he can say, hey, I beat Adrian Yanez, who was a guy that was really getting pumped up in the last few years. And he's run into a few roadblocks in 2023, Rob Font and now Jonathan Martinez.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's like you look at Adrian Yanez and you say, okay, was he overrated? I don't think that was the case. He's just kind of run into two guys that had really good game plans. With Jonathan Martinez, holy shit, man, those leg kicks were just absolutely brutal. And he did what I think a lot of people felt was lacking from Jose Aldo later in his career. And you could even maybe point to Edson Barboza a little bit. And it was, he went to his strength right away. He was throwing them right away, and they were bothering Adrian Yanez from the get-go. It kind of forced him to make adjustments, but he got to the point where it forced him to just throw home runs. You could tell Adrian knew, I cannot survive like this. I need to put this guy away right now. And, you know, he would switch the stances. He would try and check them, and he just couldn't do enough. And so what that fight ended up being, in my opinion, was just Adrian throwing a home run punch and then going on the defensive and waiting to throw another home run punch. And it just wouldn't work out for him. And it was unfortunate, but Jonathan Martinez looked like an absolute monster. And I want to say he had like a strange call out at the end. But I want to say it was Merab.
It was Merab, but with the acceptance that it's more than likely not going to happen, but still it was loaded into the universe. You know, so no one can say he's ducking people, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, that'd be fun. And he definitely is showing a lot of improvements, and he looks like he's going to be a player at that division.
What do you think? Is he just an introvert? Because remember we interviewed him at the UFC Fan Expo?
Yeah, so it was funny because they were even saying on the broadcast that he's one of the funnier guys in the gym. And if you watch like his post-fight interview and stuff, like you can tell there's moments where he is kind of a funny guy. I think it's just up to us maybe to pull that out of him a little bit more, and he's got to give us a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But he's definitely a guy that I'm shooting to try and get on the show this week.
No, that'd be great. I mean, like I said, we've already had him once, so we'd love to have him again. And maybe just kind of poke and prod and see if we can get some sort of a future outlook for him. Because he really is the type of guy that can kind of, he's put in his time. That's a nice KO win, even though it's not like a clean KO, you know, fist to putting someone's lights out. It's still a fascinating one. I think a lot of people are fascinated with leg kick KOs. I mean, I am, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's just so, it's something you're not expecting. But like, if you remember, even if you go all the way back to the early days of the UFC, when we saw Paul Varlins go down to Marco Huas in that fashion, it just kind of changed the game a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. where you were like, oh my God, we are so used to things are going to get decided with your hands. Like, honestly, those first couple of UFCs, not a lot of guys were throwing head kicks either. You know, you'd see Gerard Gourdeau pop one like a front kick or even Hoist Gracie to set up a takedown, but you didn't even really see that. So when
Maurice Stark kind of introduced those, right?
Right. He was one of the first ones to do that. Even Pete Williams, remember he finished Mark Coleman with one of Mark those, Coleman. But they didn't really throw those too often. And so when you saw somebody go down to leg kicks, you were like, holy shit, like it really doesn't matter. Like you can just find ways to chop people down. Even if you look at Emmanuel Yarborough, right, and how big he was, Keith Hackney wasn't throwing leg kicks at that guy. He was just throwing punches, getting in and out, in and out. But really, a guy with like some good leg kicks probably could have done a number on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Anything on Vivian Araujo over Jennifer Maya? That was the co-main event. I kind of skipped to the leg kicks because I told you I love the leg kicks. Or even Michelle Pajeda debuting at 185 and finishing Andre Petroski. Any thoughts on any of those fights?
I thought Araujo was just very dominant. You know, mm-hmm. there just didn't seem to be any other result. Like you could just kind of see it creeping and creeping and creeping. It was a good victory for her.
Mm-hmm. Pajeda has already kind of dismissed anything about, well, is it a one-time thing? He sounds like he's happy at 185. Happy. Can eat what he wants. And sounds like, you know what it sounds like more? It's more mental freedom that he has, you know, to go along with the physical, of course, but still, like, he really just seems like a happy dude.
Yeah, I think it was, who was it? Somebody was talking about running into him in the PI, like, the day before or something, and just putting their hand on his shoulder and going, holy shit, this guy's big. He's just happy now. And that's good. That's such a big part of the game. Like you have to enjoy life. And you know, you've showed that he can do this. I'm all for that. I think fighters should do those things.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Just Kiesa.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. So the rest of the card, like I say, I already gave out the bonuses and I don't get too excited about leg kicks. I'm sorry about fight nights. I got thrown off. Did you hear those fireworks?
But that just the fireworks on our end kind of just sound like things going on in the house, like somebody moving a chair or something.
Yeah. No, these are monsters, man. They go hard. I like them. Darren Elkins defeated TJ Brown. I think that's pretty notable. You know, Elkins has been around for a long time. He's 39 years of age, says he still doesn't want to stop, says he's injury free, but the damage, like, he won't go away. He's like a Clay Guida, like an Edson Barbosa, Jim Miller. You know what I mean? Like, hey, I can still fight. Pay me some decent money. I'll be the test for the young guys. They either get past me or they don't. But, like, they're scrappy fights.
Yeah, but so this is like the argument that we always have, not you and me, but just overall with fighters is like, why are you going to wait until that performance that tells you have to go, right? Like you can kind of already feel it. And I understand this is the most fighters probably have made since the sport started and you want to make those big paychecks, but I just don't want him to wait until he gets completely KO'd to say, now is the time. I think you should treat every fight kind of like it could be the last one, and depending on what the matchup is, because dude, man, like some of these up and coming guys, man, they're unforgivable, right? Like if you look at like a Jonathan Martinez, like, do you want to wait for a guy that maybe a lot of people don't know about? They're no joke. This dude will not like clean your clock. You know, any of these young up and comers, you don't want to mess around with any of those types of fighters. So I would say if I'm him, it was a competitive fight and he didn't dominate the whole fight. You know, there were times where he was put in submissions, but I think you need to treat every fight like it could be your last. And hopefully he knows when the time is right, because he's taken a lot of punishment in the cage.
And he thrives on it though, right?
Yeah, but maybe this one would have been a good one to go away on, but who knows, man.
Mm-hmm. Terrence McKinney gets his second KO in under 20 seconds. And I know Anthony Johnson's another guy that's done it, and I think there might be one or two other cats in that group. He's kind of pissed, though, because he didn't get a bonus. And he's actually made a good case for him being late to the party, you know, like taking a fight on late notice, or just him having a flashy KO. And he's like, what the hell does it take for me to get a bonus here, man? I think he's got a point.
Yeah, I agree with him, because that's the whole point of the matter. Like, okay, if that's not worthy of a bonus, what should I have done? Should I not have knocked him out that fast? Should I have let the fight go on longer? Did you not give me the right opponent? Would it have been somebody else? Would you have given me? Because that's not out of his control, right? So that's where arguments like the one that you've kind of championed for so long with give all the finishers bonuses would kind of benefit. But that would be my first question. When you go in the back, say, okay, I didn't get the bonus, but what could I have done to get the bonus? And then they got to give you some kind of answer, right? And it seems like whatever that answer is going to be is going to be something that's out of Terrence McKinney's control. Then it's not your problem. It's their problem.
It is, because it's not his fault if someone's getting him an opponent on late notice, or him being the late notice guy. I mean, it's not like maybe the same type of buildup on either side, but the KOs are the KOs, man. To beat someone else at this level in 20 seconds and do it for the second time, like that is pretty special. It's pretty special, all I can say.
Yeah.
And this dude in July got waxed. I remember Nazim Sadikov gave him the RNC, and then he got the flying knee as well. So 2023 started kind of crappy for him, right? But he's shaken off those two losses, and now he's beaten Mike Breeden and Brendan Marat, and he wants to face Chris Duncan, who he originally was supposed to face, and he wants to do it before the end of the year, which would be five fights this year. But if you finish on a three-fight win streak, especially with, you know, stoppages, that's an easy way to forget the early part of the year.
Yeah, it's true.
And then the other thing, the only other fight, I guess, that I thought merited a little bit of discussion is Ashley Yoder probably done now after losing this fight to Emily Ducati?
Yeah, that was a rough one. You know, you and I actually called one of her fights where the reason her name stuck out to us was she got cut really badly. And she was able to bounce back and win that fight. So this isn't the first time that she's looked like that at the end of a fight. But this one was tough, you know, and she's coming back from an injury. Who knows if she's feeling 100%. But I do know that, like, outside of fighting, she does do things. I mean, she has ways to maintain herself, and that might have to be her route, or maybe she has to look to go to another organization. I don't know what she's thinking, but that one was probably a rough one for her, unfortunately.
She's lost five of her last six, and now she's 8-9, so she's not a 500 fighter. She's very personable and cool, and the UFC likes a fighter to have a personality. And she's tough, man. She really is. I enjoy watching her kind of test younger fighters, because, look, she's no spring chicken either. 35 years old, going on 36 pretty soon. So, look, we got to call it as it is. There's sometimes where you see a fight, you match it up with either a poor run or that number, you know, the age number, and you go, could this one have been it? And I think this one might be it for her. She's also had long lulls where she hasn't fought, so she can't even sometimes fall back on that. Well, he or she's always there for us, you know what I mean? So we're going to hang in there with him. Of course, Sam Alvey being the classic case there.
Yeah, a former training partners of hers.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, if they book her again, I'm not hating. What are you going to do? But, yeah, get her a plastic surgeon for mm-hmm. sure. Don't do the outside stitches. Okay, so look, what about this thing, man? Dylan Danis and Logan Paul. We can't get away from it. It trafficked well for us. I was watching social media. People were all over it. Of course it was a garbage fight. No one's ever trying to say these are proper boxers or anything, but people gave an F. You know what I mean? There's no way around that. People actually cared about it. And I can't still figure out why, but they do. So we got to cover it, even if it's just 5 minutes. What were your thoughts?
Well, here are the stories from the outside looking in. I was a guy that maybe gave two shits about it, but here's what I was curious about. I probably wasn't going to order it, but I did want to know, is he going to make it to the fight? Is there going to be something that gets him out of this fight, right? And based on what we saw that week with the UFC, I mean, there's definitely things that'll take you out of the fight. So that's one thing that I was kind of enamored with. Now, when you go to the press conference and you see them get into the scuffle and you see him hit Logan Paul in the face with that mic, he cut him up and you could see right away. And that's kind of like that thing where we can all point to and say, yes, see, he was going to get out of it no matter what. We knew it. And you can't even really blame him because Logan Paul threw the first strike, right? Like he threw the microphone at him. So he could almost say, well, I was defending myself. I can't just let that happen. He would have had a way. You know what he is? He's kind of like your Riddler or Lex Luthor, you know, like they just kind of find a way to get away and they'll be back the next episode of Batman, that sort of thing. And that almost seemed like it was going to be the moment. Those 10 hours that maybe we thought, oh my God, is he out? Is Mike Perry going to be in? What's going to happen here? That got my attention and upgraded me to, I'm probably still not going to order it, but I want to know what happens. So when he finally walked out and got in there, that's when it like clicked in my head. And I was like, holy shit, he's actually going to fight. This is not a good idea. He's not a boxer. He's barely an MMA fighter, right? He's just a jiu-jitsu guy. And yeah, I guess the fight that we all imagined would happen played out. I don't know. If you're Dylan Danis, like if you're his best friend, can you really hate? Like you're probably happy for him, right? He just collected a gigantic paycheck. Mm-hmm. He's done it really without having to do much, right? In MMA, he's barely fought. In boxing, he just went out there and basically covered up and got out of there. He got disqualified, but what does he care? He's not a boxer. He doesn't give a shit. But he made a lot of money. His YouTube probably keeps growing. The dude is doing what he wants and making money doing it. I don't know if he has the shelf life. I don't know if this makes people want to tune into what he has to say more, or if people are just absolutely done with him.
You know, I don't even want to say he made a mockery of boxing because that's so obvious that he did. He made a mockery, honestly, of, I guess, the status of where we are in combat sports in this low-level celebrity boxing.
George, he made because a mockery you guys can of pull us. It off.
Yeah.
That's what way, he did.
But in a way, we're like, oh, well, I guess we'll take the traffic. You know, I'm being honest here. We'll take the traffic. People want to tune in. When we post stuff, people tune in. You can't deny that at all. Now, who does it? I don't know. And if you're a hardcore fan that says it's bullshit, it sucks, I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with you. But guess what? You're outnumbered by like 90 others that kind of go, this is crazy, but fun. And here's the thing. He got paid. Who wouldn't do that? A lot of us would box Logan Paul for $1 million. Hell, a lot of us said, I think we'd get knocked out by Mike Tyson for $1 million. But here's what was supposed to happen. He should have gave a better offering. He just absolutely did nothing. But someone's already going to pay him, so whatever. But what I'm pissed at is that Logan Paul didn't squash him like a bug. I wish he would have just done that so we could kind of like move on. All right, bro. Are you going to go back to submission grappling where you're one of the best, you know, in your weight class? Or are you going to go to MMA and finish what you started? Because other than that, I'm tired of hearing about you. I really am. I kind of hope he runs into a bad boy like a Mike Perry or Diaz brother or Masvidal. I don't know who. And someone clocks him, you know, because that's what he seems like, is that kind of stuff. So it's not like I'm wishing death upon him. Not doing that. But he just kind of needs to be, I guess, squashed like a little bug. And then maybe that'll be it. But he kind of was it. It ended in this way. He went for a guillotine. Logan Paul got out of that easily. So, you know, he'll have a little bit of bragging rights or whatever. But Logan Paul didn't really make this guy pay. And a poor boxer was standing in front of him, dude. Logan Paul, I mean, I know he technically gets the finish. And, oh, by the way, Drake cashes. But he should have squashed. Jake Paul would have squashed him.
Yeah, he needed to knock him out. That was the only method of victory. Like, this is a win, but I don't know that this is a victory. And another thing that I thought about with this new era and just making money, I kind of feel like the Diaz brothers lost a little bit here, in the sense that Nate Diaz fought Jake Paul a lot better than I thought he would have. It was a lot closer of a fight than I thought it would have been. I don't see why they should have been ringside, and they should have called for, you know what, let's fight again, rematch Jake Paul, Nick or Nate Diaz, and then have Nick Diaz say, I'll take Logan, and turn that into something and make even more money. I feel like they missed the boat on that.
I think the Diaz brothers are like the UFC. Somehow they just always land on their feet. And so there'll be a big opportunity for them to make money. They put in their time. They deserve it. They've been the Diaz brothers for about a good 20 years now. But yes, goes, they could have been a lot richer pair of Stockton bros that, you know, get down. They could have been a lot richer. They could have done a lot more. So this isn't the first time they missed an opportunity, but they'll still be all right. Although they flirted with, I don't want to say like, you know, bankruptcy or being poor or anything, but, you know, with just kind of like flirted with maybe not having the potential to make big money is what I guess. Maybe guys that were just going to show up, exit, and then just not have too much to show for that, you know, and not be able to do it. But, you know, these guys, I think, couldn't make something with their brand. But they just, like I say, they're not as savvy all the way around. They kind of have it down for combat sports, but I always wonder, could a tequila have been, you know, part of their, I guess, brand? I hate using that word, but, you know, could they have done that? I mean, a lot of times they're their own worst enemy. You know, they won't show up to, back in the day, it was, you'd have to cross your fingers. Hopefully they would show up to some sort of a viewing party or whatever. Yeah, watch parties, and they could easily pick up, you know, 10K, 20K, just to kind of watch the fights they're going to watch at home anyway. But they missed the flight, or they did this, or they did that.
They'll be the first ones to tell you that they don't really enjoy fighting so much. And I do understand that, but at the same time, you know you're going to end up doing it, so why not try and capitalize as much as you can? And I think I just feel like their method has always been, I'm going to collect a big paycheck, and then I'm going to spend as much as I spend, and when I need money, I'll fight again. And that that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Like I say, they'll wind up on their feet like a cat. They got lives, but they could have done a lot more with the hands that they've been dealt. They fold a lot, I guess. I guess is the only other thing I can say. On that same card, so basically it was 10-9 times 5, so 5 rounds to nothing for Logan Paul. It ends via disqualification, which is a TKO. So Drake wins his $850,000 bet that was made public. And Tommy Fury beat KSI. Now, that one was a little bit closer. that had two 57-56s and then I think a 57-57 or something like that. And so he won a majority decision, but it's a draw. Sorry, it doesn't go down as a draw. It goes down as a majority decision. So he does get the win, but it was pretty damn close because one judge gave it a draw. And that's a pro boxer against another one of these YouTube sensations.
Yeah. The dude, he takes it really serious, though. I want to say even maybe more than Jake Paul does. But Tommy Fury, I think he's still got room to grow. You know, he is a professional boxer, and he has kind of grown up in this. But he should be not light years ahead of these guys, but it should be kind of like what you would expect in like a sparring session to him. And it's not really looking that way. It's more looking like competitive fights.
Yeah. I think obviously he'll always be measured to his brother, half brother, whatever. And we all know he's definitely not that level. But I thought KSI should have been the type of fight he should win. If he can win that one, if he can't finish him, then I just don't expect much from him against real boxers. Because he's 10-0, but his last two wins are Jake Paul and KSI. So Now, is he doing a bad thing? Hell, I bet you he's making more money than certain boxers, you know, that are all he want to do is box and be a world champion. But he's definitely making more money than them. So if he wants to stay on that route, okay. But why not go out and smash these guys, you know, so that maybe you can get back in there and maybe get on the same card as your brother. That'd be huge for him, I think.
Yeah.
This week, we launched the 30 greatest fighters in UFC history. So be on the lookout for that, folks. We started a few days ago, and we already released the number 30 guy, Dustin Poirier. And if you see it online, maybe give it some love. We're all really trying to go out of our way to retweet, comment, share, that type of stuff. But this is pretty big for MMA Junkie. As a team, collectively, we all took part in it. So you'll see us in the narrator roles for, you know, like three or four each. Us being the reporters, a couple of the editors, the radio guys, and of course the stars of the group, the video team. I gave them a social media shout out, but I want to give them a shout out on our show. Ken Hathaway, Abby Supan, Cold Coffee and Kamikaze, if you will. Those guys really did a lot. And so, you know, special shout out to them. They made us look good for starters, but they kind of just glue it all together. And so when you see a real cool video, it all has to do with those two. So special shout out to them. Number 30 was Dustin Poirier. And today's release was Frank Shamrock. He's the number 29 guy. And you know what's funny, guys, is right away people were like, what? You guys are crazy. You got this guy over Dustin Poirier. And you got the hardcores going, learn the game casual. And then you got the young uns going, what's this old dude do? Done. But hey, look, man, Frank Shamrock won a title and defended it four times. Like, respect, man. You know what I mean? And he was doing it in an era where it was 170 to 200 and 200 on up. So, like, there wasn't this whole 10 pounds, 15 pounds or whatever. He beat guys like Jeremy Horn, Boss Rudin back in Pancrase, Tito Ortiz, Kevin Jackson, the wrestler. I mean, like, there's some names there. I think
that big Baroni fight in Strikeforce.
Yeah, the Baroni fight as well. John Lover was another guy. So, you know, these were some really tough guys. And is the game what it is now? I don't know. Well, let me tell you something, folks. I want you to think about this. Don't throw it in our face. Oh, well, this happened in the 90s or whatever. Doesn't Jordan still hold up? Jordan won six titles. He won like 90 to 92. And then he came back in, I believe it was 94 to 96 or something like that. And yeah, sure. Some people will say it's Kobe, Kareem, LeBron or whatever. But I think 95% of us still say, yeah, it was Jordan. So guess what? You know, he did what he did at that time. He still holds up. Now, I'm not trying to put Shamrock on that level. But what I'm saying is, you know, it wasn't that long ago, and he fought who was in front of him. And we're not even hating on Dustin Poirier. Just these are all pretty great fighters that have done a lot of stuff. But look, if you want to get nitpicky, Shamrock won the undisputed title and defended it four times. Poirier won the interim title. He was a stud at featherweight, stud at lightweight, but he didn't win in the undisputed title. So obviously with that came no title defenses. So if you just want to get technical, I think even Dustin Poirier would tip his hat.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, that's what makes these lists fun, though, is you want people to chime in. You want them to give their opinions as a whole. This is where we ended up. But if you can, you know, help us make even a bigger debate and retweet all these and help us out in that sense, because it really was fun to do. And the people that put it together did amazing jobs, Abby and Ken Hathaway.
Faux show. So be on the lookout for 28. I think they would kill me if I kind of gave you guys either the name or some sort of a clue. Is there a clue we can give, Ghost? Or would we just keep our pie holes shut?
Keep our pie holes shut.
All right. We'll say this. It's just a big person, not a small person. There you go. Hey, how about this? You know, Brandon Mills, the son of UFC legend Matt Hughes, he fought, right? He debuted. Unfortunately, he lost. And the scores weren't too friendly. 29-28, 29-28, and 30-26, all against him. He lost to Jordan Clark, who was on his fourth fight. He now goes to 3-1, Mills to 0-1. Look, I don't know much about this guy, but he was on that same card as Miletic and Mike Jackson, who we'll get to in just a second. What I can tell you is Hannon Burrell and Chris Cyborg both lost their fights, and they went on to become world champions. But again, I don't know much about this guy. I don't know what, you know, what he might do with all this, but just something to keep in mind. Yeah. Matt Hughes, I believe, was in his corner, so pretty cool. And so let's just talk about Mike Jackson versus Pat Miletic. You know, when I first heard about it, goes, I thought, okay, I'm kind of interested. You know, Jackson's been getting into it with people, whether it's online or on the streets. He's the guy that got taken down by Jake Shields at the PI. Later on, I guess him and the UFC parted ways, because Mike Jackson was a member of the UFC at that point. And if you want to connect more dots, Mike Jackson's the first guy to fight CM Punk. So, second person to fight CM Punk. The first guy was Mickey Gall, yeah. But yeah, these two guys, so they actually used to train together. They were friends. But politics divided these two. Of course, you know, Pat Miletic is right wing. Mike Jackson, a little bit more of a liberal guy. Well, they got in. They got in a couple rounds, which Miletic did well in. However, he quit on the stool between rounds 2 and 3. So he's the one that got his hand raised. But I think Miletic can look himself in the mirror and go, well, I still did more to him than he did to me. You know, I don't think Miletic, it's not like Miletic was undefeated or anything. He's had a Hall of Fame career. I think he just wanted to punch him a few times, and he did.
Yeah. You know, Pat's up there in age now. And on top of everything, you know, the last time we saw him in combat sports, he fought Michael Nunn in a kickboxing fight. And that didn't go his way either. So I kind of was against seeing this fight, but it happened, and, you know, I don't know how much street cred. I think it was just a personal beef that we all got to watch play out.
Mm-hmm. How about that, though? You know, because no one will ever accuse him of being a puss. Remember those stories we had to hear about the Miletic group and how much they pushed each other? And yes, he's 55 now, but he just chose to not get off the stool. So that's kind of a guy that emptied every drop from the gas tank.
Mm-hmm.
Smashed him with some elbows, too, man. So, you know, whatever. Lastly, well, maybe there might be one other thing. Craig Jones, who's a world-renowned grappler, had something interesting to say. He says that Volkanovski is going to put an end to Sambo at UFC 294. So Jones is highly respected in the Brazilian jiu-jitsu world, submission grappling. He's probably, I think if you spoke to people that know that sport, and you said, name the best five going today, you know, you're going to hear names like, obviously, you know, Felipe Pena and Gordon Ryan, Nicky Rodriguez. Craig Jones will be not too far behind. And he's an Australian. He's a coach to Volkanovski. And so, look, Volkanovski was in some tough spots against Islam Makhachev the first time. And I think he survived them because Jones coached him, right? But he's going so far.
Brian Ortega before that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But he's going so far as to say that Volkanovski, who's taking the fight on less than 2 weeks' notice, he didn't have no other fight booked, is going to kill Sambo, and we're going to stop hearing about this Russian dancer, was the quote that he said. I guess, look, it maybe lifts the fight a little bit of trash talk. I don't know if Volkanovski's okay with it or not or whatever. I mean, they are the away team. But I don't know. Like, Sambo's done well. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Stop it. Like, Fedor Emelianenko, Khabib Nurmagomedov, like, I don't know, to not be sold on Sambo, like, when I want to like Craig Jones. I don't know him very well, but I want to like him. Just say something one step less than that is what I'm saying. One step, and we won't label you as, you know, a clown or ridiculous or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I think Sambo's been able to prove itself in mixed martial arts for sure. It deserves its respect.
Mm-hmm. I like I say, I like it. He says if Sambo was easy, it would be called jiu-jitsu. But I think I've heard other versions of either jiu-jitsu and judo or judo and wrestling. That's not anything original. I've seen that before. He just twisted it around a little bit. He says Sambo's a myth. I mean, he was saying a lot of stuff. Hmm. Yeah. All right. So what do we have this week? UFC 294. Is upon us Saturday. There will be a watch along, but a couple things you should know. Early start time. They are in Abu Dhabi and they are ahead of us. So we are going to, you know, usually the UFC is a stickler to 10 Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific for the start of the main card. But with their partners in Abu Dhabi and them being like, I think 8 hours ahead, they're adjusting it. Or something like that. 12 hours ahead, 10 hours, doesn't matter. Here are the start times. Excuse me. The prelims start at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. Included in those prelims, here are some big fights. Tim Elliott versus Mohamed Malkayev. That's your main event of the prelims, I guess. Javed Basharat versus Victor Henry. That should be pretty good. Nathaniel Wood is back. He faces Mohamed Naimov. Jinju Fry versus Victoria Dudikova. A few others. Then the pay-per-view portion starts at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. We got Islam Makhachev versus Alexander Volkanovski. Hamzat Chimaev versus Kamaru Usman. Magomed Ankalaev versus Johnny Walker. Ikram Aliskarov versus Nasruddin Imavov. And Muin Gafarov versus Saeed Nurmagomedov. So, look, I don't think anyone can argue with the top three, man. Ankalaev versus Johnny Walker, that probably should have some title implications for what's right now, I guess, a vacant. You know, there's no champ there, but these guys aren't too far behind is what I'm trying to say. So, I don't think any one of us is displeased with this fight card, correct?
No, I like this card all the way from the bottom to the top. I think there's interesting matchups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and look, I know we rail on the UFC. We did it last week, so I don't want to get into it, you know, again. At the end of the day, as we get close, all we can do is just look forward to it. And they are some pretty, really, really intriguing fights. But, you know, a current champ is moving up and a former champ is moving up. So it's not really, you know, top two guys from... Well, the co-main event's not a title fight, but you know what I mean. That's just kind of mm-hmm. my biggest gripe. By the way, Prochaska and Pajeda are fighting for that vacant title. So I see the winner of Ankalaev and Walker being possibly in a good spot, especially if they can impress to fight the winner of this fight. This fight is 3 weeks later at UFC 295 in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to end it a little bit short. You want to say anything goes on the way out? If I missed anything, I know we covered the boxing, the Sodiq Youssef and Barbosa fight and some of the controversies out there. I guess, maybe give a little taste of the USADA updates that we've had. I know we're going to get into it tomorrow on spinning backlick, but I guess it has been big news.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest mistake in this whole thing was the way the news came out to us. Because the way it came out to us was, we're done with USADA. It's more of a USADA, the UFC's done with us. Them making that announcement, it confused the hell out of everyone. Because the first question you want to ask is, well, does that mean drug testing's going away? Or does that mean the UFC's going to handle it themselves? Because we don't want that. That's where the biggest issue in all this is. And since our last show, Hunter Campbell and Jeff Nowitzki sat down and actually took questions from the media and kind of elaborated a little bit more on the situation. I applaud them for doing that. I think that's absolutely necessary. I'm sure all this created a shitstorm for them. And now we have a little bit more of a game plan of what, in which direction the UFC is going. And they're not going to get away from drug testing. They're just going to go with a different company. And that can end up being a good thing for the UFC if what they're saying is true. If they're really going to address some of these things that I think fighters are sick of, getting woken up in the middle of the night, getting asked for piss tests during weight cutting, getting away from some of the blood samples, you know, doing different types of testing. Looks like they're going to be going after EPO now more frequently. Those are all good things. You know, the only drawback I think that people are going to ask is, well, like, what role did Conor McGregor really play in all this? And I think the UFC did a good job of explaining, look, we never said that he was going to get away from the 6-month mark. We told USADA there's no way he's going to get around it. He's going to have to do it. The problem is Conor McGregor doesn't say that, right? When he goes on social media, he says basically what he says goes. I think where the big problem came was the UFC needed to check this guy. And when he says something like that, come out and say, no, that's false. That will not be happening. Because people are going to knock on USADA's door and go, wait a minute. You guys are supposed to be the end all be all. You're going to allow this to happen? They need to be able to provide an answer. They can't say, no, behind closed doors, they told us no. Like, that's not their situation. So I do feel like Conor McGregor threw a little bit of gasoline on this fire that led us to where we're at. And that is unfortunate. But according to Jeff Nowitzki and Hunter Campbell, this is something that was kind of in the works anyway, because of some of the things that, you know, I just brought up, the app not being the easiest to deal with, the whereabouts of fighters. It seems like we were going to kind of go in that direction anyways. So if that's the case, then look, we just got there a little sooner than we thought. It doesn't mean that USADA's gone today. This is till the end of the year. These guys are still getting tested. And then a new system will be introduced. But I like that we got more information on it, and now we can speak on it a little bit more intelligibly.
Yeah, and if the UFC was on board with what USADA was doing, I think they could have just said it. They always made it a mysterious thing, which led us to believe they could tweak the rules and maybe get this guy in on 4 months instead of 6. And then we start wondering, and then it has different branches, right? Then we start wondering, well, why 4? Is it because they need a main event, you know, at the 4-month mark, and so they're willing to tweak the rules? Or, you know, as McGregor or found some sort of a loophole, you know, that would help him at some point, you know, all that sounds shady. So for Hunter Campbell to go, no, we were in agreement. He was going to do 6 months. Well, you could, yeah, definitely. We could have known about that a little bit more. Here's a little bit of what we know. And again, we're going to cover this thoroughly tomorrow on Spinning Backlick. They're with a new outfit called DFSI. Drug Free Sport International has been around for 2 decades. They worked with the NCAA, NFL, Major League Baseball. So they have been involved in professional sports. Now, there's going to be a little bit of mudslinging going on. And so who's heading the program? You're going to hear his name get kind of thrown out, and maybe his past. And, you know, I'm not – I don't know. I believe more in the tests. You know what I'm saying? And the tests are the tests. And they'll start up in 2024 when USADA ends out. Because I just feel like it. George Firo's the guy, right? Yeah. I just feel like, well, then we got to do a deep dive into the guy accusing Jeff Pirro, you know, of, you know, or suggesting that we should look into it. Man, who's got time for all that? I just want to see fights, and I want to know that they're clean, and it sounds like at least that part's taken care of, and I don't want a Johnny Come Lately outfit to do it either, and so we heard that that's not the case with Drug Free Sport International. So, but do we have to start looking into them? Sure, I guess I'm wrong. Maybe we do have to look into them a little bit and see, you know, what rabbit hole that leads us down.
it's a pretty amazing rabbit hole, because right away I could tell you he's been doing martial arts for a long time. I think he's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, so he loves the sport. But if you feel like you've heard this name before, it's because this is the dude that interrogated Saddam Hussein, you know, with the FBI. He was the guy that went in there and for, I want to say, a period of at least a month was kind of the mouthpiece between Saddam and the American forces. And if you look into this guy and you look at the psychology of what it is he had to do with Saddam Hussein to gain his trust, to understand him, to get him to open up, it's pretty fascinating. He's a fascinating individual. And so you don't just grab a Muppet and say, hey, you want to interrogate Saddam Hussein today? Like, no, you got to earn something like that. Now, from that point on, what has he done? Who knows, right? We got to kind of look into that. But I know that's definitely, they did not reach into the bucket of labeled scrubs to pull this guy's name out, right?
Right. You know, but everyone has a past. And even the guy saying that USADA went full of Britney Spears, he had a controversy at the beginning of this year. So anyway, I guess I'm just glad that it'll be a seamless transition. And I'm glad that these guys have been doing it for a while. Since we don't know the full truth, again, it's hard to say these guys are right, these guys are wrong, or vice versa. But yeah, you were right with Hunter Campbell saying, this whole time Connor would have had to do the 6 months. I think that would have gone a long way in clearing things up for McGregor, for fans, for Michael Chandler, who I know has said, I really don't care, but come on, man. He's a pretty honorable guy. I think he just wanted to make sure he never lost the fight, and that's why he think he was willing to go in there and dance with the devil if he had to. But still, why do that when, you know, you're getting woken up at 6 a.m.? So, I don't see why your dance partner should have, but you'll see a lot more of this on tomorrow's Spinning Backlick. And I know some of you might not catch it live, so just know that it's available on our YouTube page right away as soon as the show's over, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. And you can see it in its entirety, you know, beginning right at, I guess, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific when the show's done. But we will start at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. So we'll see you all tomorrow, right, folks? Fun stuff here at MMA Junkie Radio as always, and always thank you for your support. We'll talk to you soon. Go out and be a champion.